Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 23 of Dudes on Hockey. Dude, another good week for the Sharks.
One day equals happiness.
One game and
we
they
had
won.
A great day that day too.
It was a good time.
Henry's High Life before the game.
That's right.
Had a great meal. Had a few adult beverages.
Adult beverages were had.
And watch a total whipping.
That's right. We'll be talking about the Washington game in just a moment, but first we have to start one by thanking all of you listening at Chompboard. We had good numbers last week, so we are the official podcast of chompboard.com.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope the shows will continue to improve, or at least not tail off horribly. That's all we can hope for.
Improvement is what we're striving for.
Yeah.
And entertainment.
Let's not get crazy. Anyway, but we should certainly lead with the big news item of the week, which is the comeback of Claude Lemieux.
Yes.
So Claude Lemieux, for some reason, went to China, played for the China Sharks, and that long-lost Shark, Wade Flaherty.
In goal.
Who is also a coach, by the way.
Yes.
He's like Frank Robinson, like the coach GM.
He's on the ice.
Yeah, he's on the ice.
In goal.
And coaching somehow. I don't know how that works. But anyway, so I guess Lemieux showed something over there, because now he has signed a tryout deal, a 15-day professional tryout contract for the Worcester Sharks.
Yeah. He had one assist and four penalty minutes in two games in China.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Impressive. That's some stiff competition over there.
It is tough.
I think Dale Craigrail's playing over there somewhere.
Is there a height limit to play in China? Oh. But anyway, so he's off in Worcester now. And the question is, well, the news services are reporting that Claude Lemieux is not being really considered for the big league club. He's on a minor league tryout deal. It was a minor league decision to take him to Worcester. But still, the imagination has to run wild, does it not?
I don't buy it. I don't buy it. Are we in the charity business here, Mike?
I don't know. I guess, does Worcester have some sort of autonomy in signing players? I suppose.
I guess. I guess it's possible. This is no coincidence. I also heard that Brian Burke wasn't going to Toronto a couple months ago.
We all know how that turned out.
I don't think this is a secret. I think that Doug Wilson has found lightning in a bottle with some of these veterans. Roenick has revived his career. Even though he's not having a great year statistically, he is the heartbeat of this team. And if you can add another four-time Stanley Cup winning player who is a gigantic pain in the ass for players to play against, and just have him out there for 9 or 10 minutes a game, you don't think McCarty's going to take notice?
I guess that's true. That's the interesting thing. I mean, your imagination does kind of run wild, because the first thing I thought of is, could this guy be an ace in the hole when the Sharks meet Detroit in the playoffs? Could he just be like, you know, the magic bullet for Detroit? It's just every time Draper's out there, you put up Claude Lemieux. You know, I mean,
his kryptonite. There's got to be memories of that. You want to explain for people who don't know?
Well, okay. So many years ago, when Claude Lemieux played for the Colorado Avalanche, there was a vicious hit put on Chris Draper. Hit Chris Draper in the back. Actually, the door to the bench was open.
Spilled him right into
sort of the corner of the door and completely rearranged Draper's face. Completely. And I think he needed surgery or stitches or broke bones in his face. It was a horrible hit. And then, you know, so there's always been this real bad blood, especially in Detroit versus Claude Lemieux, who has never been a Lady Bing candidate, let's put it that way.
Now, I was doing a little research today. And a poll back when ESPN had hockey coverage, they voted Claude Lemieux. It was a couple years ago when they were recapping the most hated players of all time, and number one was Claude Lemieux. So I don't know. I I'm kind of excited about it. I did tell you the other day that if he comes up to the big club, I'm going to put Lemieux on the back of my jersey just because I think it would be hilarious.
I think that's nuts, but
come on, dude.
But for those of you who haven't been following hockey as that closely for a long time, one thing that should be noted is Lemieux is not Sean Avery or Steve Ott. At least back in the day, he wasn't. He is not a marginal hockey player who instigates and that's his only use on the ice. He has won a Conn Smythe trophy for postseason MVP. So this guy is the real deal.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer.
There's no doubt about it. He's 785 career points in nearly 1,200 games. He's got almost 1,800 career penalty minutes. So he's definitely no saint.
That's right.
And he's played 233 playoff games, 158 points in the playoffs.
That's
and I
good.
Also love that he has 529 playoff penalty minutes, which I just love it. I don't know. I think Doug Wilson is kicking the tires here, and there's mutual interest between the two. Evidently, they have some sort of friendship I read somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And if Lemieux shows any signs, then he might get called up. It's interesting that, you know, Wilson found JR kind of on the Phoenix Coyote scrap heap.
Right.
And Lemieux was last real stint he had was in Phoenix and Dallas in 2002-2003, where you know, his numbers were sort of JR like in when he was really flaming out at the end. He had 68 games, 20 points.
Yeah.
And 44 penalty minutes. He was disinterested.
Right. Right. So, but if you put him in a role where he can flourish, if you put him on the fourth line, I mean, you have to think about the fourth line being JR, Lemieux, and Shelley. I mean, that's going to be really fun. That'll be really, really fun.
It would be a lot of fun. And I think, why not? Why not? I would rather see Claude Lemieux out there if he's healthy and he's able to legitimately play.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see him than Staubitz. I'd rather see him than Gotch.
Wow.
Even though Gotch has been great in the faceoff circle,
mm-hmm.
I think Claude Lemieux can win a game for you and Gotch can't hit the net.
That's unfortunately true. And the other thing that could be possible is Lemieux plays in the minors this year and then becomes what's known as a black ace for the playoffs. For those of you not familiar with that term, a black ace is a player who usually plays for the minor league club. The playoff roster is a lot larger, or there's some leeway in terms of allowing people to play in the postseason. The salary cap no longer is in effect. And so Lemieux could be brought up at that point. Even if he doesn't play with the Sharks all year, that could still happen. And I don't think that you have to clear waivers to get back up to play in the playoffs, so those players are still protected. One question that a friend of mine, Scott, had is Kyle McLaren in that same group? And after doing some research on it, I have to say yes. It's possible that the Sharks could play Kyle McLaren in Worcester all year. Then we talked about last week, maybe the one weak spot, if there is such a thing, for the Sharks team this year is that they don't have a lot of depth on D with Semenov as the number 7 defenseman. Could Kyle McLaren become the number 7 defenseman in the playoffs?
I guess so, but personally, I don't think that's going to happen.
Why not?
I think he's going to be traded before then. I think that's the goal. If I was Kyle McLaren, okay, here's a hypothetical situation, dude.
Okay.
All right. Dude, you do a great job on the podcast.
Thanks, dude.
But I'm going to go ask you to sit outside for the next 4 months while I do the podcast by myself.
Okay.
And in 4 months, once we get over 100 listeners, you can come back in then. but you can sit in the chair, dude, but you can't say anything. How are you going to feel?
Yeah.
I can't see Kyle McLaren is done as a Shark. He's done. I don't think he'd want to come back. I can't see how he'd have any sort of functional relationship with McClellan. He got cut.
But it was a salary cap reason. I don't think he got cut because he couldn't hack it. I think he got cut because there were better things out there
for
money.
Who would you have him replace right now?
Alexei Semenov.
Okay, but I'm talking about in the top six.
Well, in the top six, I wouldn't have him replace anybody.
So he'd be our seventh guy right now.
Yeah.
Healthy. I think that he's, well, you and I have a bet.
Okay, yeah, we do have a bet.
That I'm about to win.
Yes.
If McLaren plays tomorrow night, it's not traded tonight, and I hope I didn't just jinx it. But if McLaren plays, what was it, 15 games?
15 games.
In Worcester, then I win a beer.
I thought he was going to get moved by 15 games, but obviously I was wrong. So.
I still think at the deadline, a team is going to have extreme leverage on the Sharks and be able to get McLaren for less than it'll cost them to get, you know, some other defenseman who's unrestricted.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that's true, but the fact is that one, he's earning money that a lot of people don't want to pay because he cleared waivers. Two, he's going to be unrestricted in July, so why would he be worth anything on the trade market? Why not just wait till July?
Seventh rounder, Rob Davison money, baby.
I suppose, but let's look at the flip side. If you're Kyle McLaren and this is a Sharks team that is cruising into the playoffs, maybe the number one seed, why wouldn't you want to play for the Sharks in the playoffs? If you play one game in the Stanley Cup Finals, you get your name on the cup.
Because he's human? Because it can't feel good. He's saying all the right things.
I'm not saying it feels good. I'm saying it's business. Why wouldn't you want to play? I mean, that's what hockey players want, right? They want to play in the playoffs. They want to go for the cup. And if, unfortunately, because of salary cap reasons, he's in the minors all year, you think he's really going to say, maybe I won't play for the
Sharks in
the playoffs?
I don't think he would say no. I just think he's hoping that he's going to get moved.
Okay.
Now, just to throw this out, Mike, the Sharks have used this black ace strategy in the past, actually, when Marcel Gotch did not play a single game in the regular season during the 2003-2004, but he did play 5 playoff games for the Sharks. So this isn't a new thing.
And I think Claude Lemieux was in that. In his rookie year, Claude Lemieux did that as well for Montreal.
That's right.
He won the cup in 1986. So.
Right. And he had a huge playoff
series.
So I guess that's possible. But I think that it's more likely that if he's going to factor in here, we'll see him, you know, around February.
All right. Okay. Well, that's going to be interesting because now there's a new wrinkle to the McLaren saga, one that I didn't think about before. And so thank you, Scott, for bringing that to our attention, or at least posing the question, because now there's yet another thing we can think about when it comes to McLaren. He may not be done yet. You never know.
He's done.
All right. Okay, so there's one game this last week, so we can spend a fair amount of time on it. Washington. No need to go into a huge recap, but long story short, Washington came out great guns, didn't score. Sharks scored 3 goals on their first 5 shots. Brent Johnson looked like crap. Sharks cruise, win 7-2.
Perfect summation, Mike.
Thank you.
I don't know else what to say other than, sorry. I wish that Semin had played. I wish that Green had played.
Me too.
That I think that would have made a little bit of a difference, but they dominant.
They looked outclassed, you know, late in the second, in the third period. Washington didn't have an answer.
They got outclassed. They got outcoached. I don't know why they let Johnson stay out there when he clearly 3 goals on 5 shots in the first period. He was getting worked.
And I thought all 3 shots were on. I think all 3 shots were on the stick side. I thought he even misplayed the second goal, which went in off Sean Morrison, the defenseman. I thought all 3 goals were at least partially Johnson's fault because he hugged the glove side too far.
Those are coaching goals. I mean. These guys are doing what they're told. That's a Jay Woodcroft goal.
Yeah, it could be. They got the book on
Shoot
Johnson.
Shoot stick side.
That's right. But you're right. I think they should have brought in Theodore. We almost expected him to be pulled after 3 goals. We were surprised to see him in the second and surprised again to see him in the third. So
I saw Bruce Boudreau. Look, we had great club seats. Thank you to our good friend Bryce.
Thanks, Bryce.
On Saturday. And we saw, I saw Boudreau look down the bench and talked to Tater. I mean, he must have asked him what he wanted at Original Joe's later. I'm not sure. It wasn't you're going in the game.
Shaken or stirred on the martini. I don't know.
Washington is in a rough tailspin right now.
Well, once they get those guys back, that might give them some jump. But the only other thing of real note that can be mentioned about that game is possibly a heavyweight fight for the ages. I'm not a huge hockeyfights.com disciple. I do check it out when I notice a certain scrap, and I have heard the term fight of the year bandied about when we're talking about the Shelley Brashear tilt that we saw Saturday night, and it was a damn good scrap.
Punch for punch, I mean, just smacking each other in the face.
That's right.
It was good stuff.
Yeah, we actually got some audio clips from John Swenson from Sharks Page. Unfortunately, I was trying to get that to work, insert that into the podcast right here. John, thank you so much for sending us that information, and I plan on upgrading our ability to use audio in the podcast, but unfortunately this week is not that week. And but there was a really cool little clip that was about 20 seconds long that I was going to insert, that somebody mumbled something about the fight, and Shelley said, yeah, it was a really good fight. You know, we wanted to make it an entertaining fight, and sometimes you have to give up something in order to make the fight more entertaining, and I think we both did that. So basically what Shelley was saying is, I put myself out there, punched with more abandon, and opened myself up to get hit in the face repeatedly in order to make it more entertaining for us sitting in the seats.
And it's just another example of that code that, you know, Brashear's like, you want to go. Okay, but they're kind of in it together.
Right. It's almost a bit of a collaboration, because Brashear, if you look at that video, Brashear took some shots. I mean, yeah. He took a couple of huge rights from Shelley, and they both were sort of punching away at each other, trying not to avoid punches more than get their punches in. And Shelley was bloodied. He was, you know, Brashear was the winner by, you know, hockeyfights.com, which is, for me, the authority. but Brashear really can embarrass a lot of people, and Shelley was not embarrassed in that.
Not at all. It was inspiring, at least to the guys two rows in front of us.
Right, who decided to fight late in the game for reasons unknown.
Instead of actually punching each other, they just threw a beer.
That's weak.
It was weak.
Yeah, it was pretty weak.
And then they ran.
And then one of them ran away and never came back.
They turtled up like Claude Lemieux.
But anyway, here's some interesting stats on that. So the Sharks are, at least according to hockeyfights.com, which again is the authority, Sharks are 8-3-4 in fights this year, which is really good. And Shelley is 4-1-2. And last year he was 2-5-6. So Shelley did not have a good fight record last year. But this year, Shelley is fighting very well, and the Sharks are fighting well. So I'm not saying this is really contributing to the Sharks' success, but it sure don't hurt.
8-3-4, the fight record is better than Dallas's actual record.
That's right, by a long sight at that. But here, let me throw one more stat at you, actually, before we move on to the next item, which is Sharks have scored 5 goals or more 8 times already this year. We're 21 games in, 20 games into the season. And they only did that 6 times all of last year. Just to give you a little perspective on what kind of offense we're talking about with this team, it is night and day. They're already eclipsed some records from last year, and we're at the quarter pole. We haven't even seen half the season yet. So this Sharks team is really high-flying on the offensive side.
It's beautiful.
Gotta love it. So, okay, let's go to the next segment, which Doug is very enthusiastic about, which we call Dallas Takes a Dump.
Yeah, it's a big steamer too, Mike. They are officially the worst team in hockey by record. You know that?
No way.
They
no are. Kidding.
They have the fewest points. They're tied. They're in great company here, Mike. Let me tell you who Dallas, that excellent team, has 16 points, and they are tied with Atlanta for the worst record in all of hockey. Oops.
Brendan Morrow is out 6 months with a knee injury. Steve Ott has broken his hand. He's out. Marty Turco is 30th out of 30 in the league in terms of goals against average.
And trading for Sidor, who was unwanted in Pittsburgh for when they are lacking their two best players, and now he's taking major minutes. I watched them lose last night to Philly,
right,
which was a lot of fun because they were actually winning, and then they blew it.
Right, right.
And I got center ice back, Mike. Oh, we do need to talk about that.
Nice, dude. Good for you.
I'm so excited.
It's nice.
It
like
took
a warm
me a little
blanket.
While to make the commitment that I was going to spend the money on it. But
you just had to clear it with the boss.
Okay, so what? My wife said I could get it, and I did. But she's behind me, you know, and is on board for a little center ice. And I watched several games last night, and the Dallas-Philly ending was, I mean, Dallas is on the mat, and I don't think they're getting up.
I'm no goaltending coach, but Turco does not look good in goal. His moves across laterally seem very strange. He seems to be in a very strange posture on some of those goals where he's moving to side to side. It's either he's late or he's not square or something, but he just looks completely out of sorts. This is a team that I picked to make the playoffs. Did you pick them to make the playoffs this year? Okay, so you were the smart one this
year. But I didn't think they were going to be like this.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that we can honestly say that From this point out, they're playing with house money if they do anything good at all, because there's no expectations anymore.
People were talking about, I think it was on NHL Live or maybe it was on the broadcast last night, that Turco's struggling because he relies a lot on his defense positioning so that he can cheat a little bit himself to sort of cut off other angles. Does that make sense? So that, and his defense has been horrible this year. So he's given up a lot of bad goals and he's unable to make that adjustment back. They're in trouble. Big trouble.
They're in big, big trouble.
Texas size trouble. Bye bye.
Speaking of expectations, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Sharks' expectations, because now that Beauchemin is hurt, the Ducks are still not bad. Let's not overstate where the Ducks are at. The Ducks are still pretty good, and I think they'd still be the four seed if the season ended today. But it certainly looks like Dallas is more or less out of it. LA and Phoenix are struggling a bit. Neither of them seem to be real threats, certainly, to take the division. Either of those teams would be glad to make the playoffs, period. So clearly this division is the Sharks for the taking. And so now my question to you is, how are the Sharks going to deal with these expectations, which are now so high? They're the number one team in the NHL. The division seems to be theirs. The number one seed is looking at us right in the face. I know it's November. It's way too early. But still, how are the Sharks going to respond to this crazy expectation that now is going to be heaped on them?
They haven't found a challenge they don't like yet so far. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to be bothered by it at all. Back to the Lukowich interview from last week where they said that they play with a certain sort of appropriate arrogance or swagger that they believe that they're the best team and that when you play them, you're going to have to play above and beyond your best effort if you're going to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we've seen a game yet where we've walked away and go, God, they really suck tonight.
That's true.
Like, they were terrible tonight. That was embarrassing. I mean, how many times did we say that last year? You just walk out of the tank and go, God, that was so frustrating. Mm-hmm. Even when they lose, you can't like pick them apart to shreds.
Right.
I think they're going to deal with it fine. I think that the coaching staff has the right attitude. They're going to have their foot on the gas. And I would not be surprised if by January, you know, right now we have an 8-point lead. I think we're going to have a very comfortable double-digit lead over the Ducks in January, February, 14 points.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see what happens there, because I think there's going to be an inevitable slow stretch for the Sharks. It's just a question of, I've said it before, it's just a question of how are they going to deal with this adversity. It's not that adversity isn't going to come. It's just, what are they going to do then? And I hope that we see the Sharks respond to that kind of adversity the way that they've responded to small adversity within games, which they've seemed to do time and time again.
It's not just winning the division, too. It's keeping this number one seed, because it's a big difference between right now playing Nashville or playing Calgary. It's a big difference. As badly as we beat Calgary, and I still think Keenan's going to get canned and Sutter's going to come down and finish the year. They're much more dangerous with that coaching change, I think. And I don't want to play them. You fall to the three, then you got Chicago.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference there. They got to keep the one. They got to win the Pacific.
Well, speaking of Chicago, that's the next game for the Sharks. So there was a pretty rough and pretty interesting high-flying game in Chicago at the United Center a couple weeks back. And so now we're home ice. Do you think we're going to see the same kind of game or a different kind of game against Chicago this time?
I got to think it's going to start off probably a little bit tighter, but it'll end up similar.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think it'll be tighter because this team is good at home, and they seem to play a more confident defensive game at home than on the road. And on the road, trading is not a big deal on the road for them. But at home, I don't think the Sharks like to give up as many goals. You know, the fans don't like it. They don't like it. But they're happy to silence away fans with 7 goals on the road. That's fun. But having the fans get quiet when you give up some, I see it going to be a lower scoring game than last time. Of course, I have to predict the Sharks win because I don't think the Sharks are worse than any team in the NHL. I mean, Detroit is nipping at their heels at this point, but Chicago, I think the Sharks are clearly superior. You just got to watch out for that top line, right? You got to watch out for Taves, Kane, and Versteeg, your stupid fantasy boy who is getting you lots of points. But
It's not helping my record. Chicago's been sitting here for a while, too. I mean, they played in what a weird road trip. Check this out. Phoenix, at Phoenix, at Dallas, at Toronto, at San Jose.
Jeez.
What a terrible road trip.
That's rough.
That's terrible.
So how long they been in town?
Well, I would imagine that they flew here probably maybe Saturday after the game. They might have. Maybe, or Sunday. Mm-hmm. If they've been here since Sunday, so they've been here for 3 days.
Right.
So they've recovered from that travel. They've won three in a row since we beat them. They beat Phoenix. They beat Dallas. They beat Toronto. So I think they're going to be ready. It's going to be another as-advertised game. Sharks win. Barely. I'm going to say overtime.
Okay. That's an interesting pick. Okay, so let's go to the shootout where there is plenty of news to talk about. So we both ended up watching that Canadiens-Islanders game last night on center ice, where the big news was Ryan O'Byrne scored an empty net goal into his own end because Carey Price had left the net because of a delayed penalty. O'Byrne, in my opinion, was trying to clear the puck behind the net to the other defenseman who was coming down the other side. He instead put it on his own net, tied the game for the Islanders, who then proceeded to win in overtime. And this kid got booed. They were chanting his name after the game. Oh, it's brutal.
And people were really jumping on Guy Carboneau for not putting him back out right away. But I agreed with the broadcasters. You looked at his body language.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked
defeated.
Defeated, deflated to everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he... No sharp objects by Ryan O'Byrne. He just looked miserable. You can't put him back out there at all in that type of situation. It looked like a soccer play almost to me, where I thought he was playing it back to Carey Price to like control it, even though that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it was so off target.
That's right. But as Billy Jaffe said on NHL Live today, they hadn't done that play all game. And he's the color guy for the Islanders. And he said, you know, he watched the game obviously from the booth, and he said, Canadians hadn't done that all night. That's not seems to be a play in their repertoire, and all of a sudden they're going to pull that out. That seems weird late in the game. So I personally thought he was trying to put it behind the net to the other defenseman, but either way, it's a horribly embarrassing moment. But actually, the funny thing is that wasn't even the most important thing that happened in that game. You know what the most important thing was?
What is it, Mike?
Josh Georges scored his first goal in a Canadian uniform.
Really?
No joke. I mean, can we even remember when we traded him to Montreal? I don't even think they had cars then. That was 91 games ago. In his 91st game in a Canadiens uniform, he scores his first goal.
Good for him. Good
boy.
And
that was the trade that we got, where we got Craig Rivet.
Right.
So, and frankly, that goal he got was freaking lucky. It was pretty lucky.
Did he take a hit after he got the goal?
Yeah. It was a little embarrassing because like everybody on the team like mobbed him like at a Sweet 16 party. Like, I swear to God, even Carey Price came out of net, skated all the way across the ice and gave him a hug on the bench. I mean, it was a little bit like condescending, but you know, I guess I'm happy for the guy. It's kind of rough.
Okay. That is rough.
All right. So let's go to the next story, which is Roberto Luongo, another cornerstone goaltender in the National Hockey League, this time for the Vancouver Canucks, hurts himself, undisclosed lower body injury. People think it's a groin injury. They say week by week, most of the time it's about a month, maybe more. This team has a lot of trouble scoring. Are they just going to completely tank it right here, or are they going to hold up in front of Curtis Sanford?
They're the 3 seed right now. They're on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Demetra is on fire. They beat the Wings last night. They legit beat them. They came from behind to beat them.
Yeah.
So
I
didn't think Vancouver was going to do well, but I would think they're going to hit a rough patch at some point. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but you got to figure Curtis Sanford can't keep it up. I hope he can. I picked him up in the fantasy league.
Oh, nice.
Thank
dude.
You. But, you got to think that they're going to come back down to earth. But right now, it's really clicking for Vancouver. They look pretty good.
Damn, Curtis Sanford's a good pickup, you bastard.
Sorry.
That was good.
You're
always good with those. Like, as soon as somebody gets injured, you're always like picking up the backup guy.
It's like a Hail Mary for me right now. Yeah. Fantasy league is pretty sad.
Oh, well.
I'm the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, well. It happens. It happens to the best of us. Okay, next.
Usually happens to you.
No, it doesn't. I'm always in the middle of the pack. That's my curse. I either win or I'm like sixth. Okay, so anyway, next story is Brian Burke, big surprise, shock of the century, might actually become the Toronto general manager. No kidding.
This is stunning.
Yes, yes. I had to sit down, you know, have a cool washcloth on my forehead, take a nap.
What a great first trade he made, too.
That wasn't him, though.
Yes, he did that.
You think so?
Of course.
What was it?
You think that there are negotiations for him, and then he doesn't get to sign off on a move that his team just made?
I don't know. I think Bob McKenzie intimated that it was a Fletcher play. Who was Koliakovo and who for?
Alex Steen.
Alex Steen for Lee Stempniak to the Blues.
That's a good deal for Toronto.
I think so.
What are they missing?
Yeah, both of those two guys from Toronto were kind of disappointing. I guess John Davidson in St. Louis is hoping for some sort of resurgence from... I think they were both first-round draft picks, so he's hoping that somehow those guys find their mojo again. They've been given enough time to find it in Toronto, and it hasn't been found, so...
I guess with the Blues, when you suck, it can't suck any worse, right?
You do whatever you can.
That's another bad team.
We'll have to end on a slightly scary note. Boston is unbeaten in the last 10 games. The gap between the Sharks and the rest of the league is closing. Mm-hmm. Are you worried?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, all it takes. The Sharks haven't lost a back-to-back game, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is a little mini skid. That there's a road trip coming up when we're in New York. I mean, we're looking months ahead, but that's a potential devastating road trip going out to the East Coast. So, I'm concerned, but the way that they're playing, it's hard to feel anything but love.
That's right. And on that note, we're going to end this week's Dudes on Hockey. Thank you so much for listening. You can check us out. Our blog on the web is at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, and we'll see you again next week. Same time, same place.
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.